Here we are. This is Real World Radio on air.
Report from the People's Summit for a Fossil-Free Future. The first conference on transitioning away from fossil fuels was held in April in Santa Marta, Colombia. More than 60 countries participated in this international event organized by the host country and the Netherlands. In the days leading up to the conference, civil society organizations and social movements convened the People's Summit for a Fossil-Free Future, where they led the way through people-centered proposals and real-world experiences towards a truly just transition, free from fossil solutions and corporate capture. Our colleague and communications officer at Friends of the Earth International, Guylaine Fandel, was on-site conducting interviews to produce the radio report we present now. First up, we have Catalina Caro, General Coordinator at the environmental organization CENSAT Friends of the Earth Colombia. She offers a general assessment and tells us why these spaces are so important.
Bueno, la primera conferencia para la transición más allá de los fósiles.
The first conference on transitioning away from fossil fuels was a very important event because it allowed us to address one of the main discussions surrounding the climate crisis. Who is truly responsible, and what concrete actions and measures must be taken to address this crisis? Speaking out about fossil fuels, the need to halt their proliferation and to stop extractive activities and their impacts, especially in the global south, has made it possible to identify and name those truly responsible for the climate crisis. The first conference keeps this debate on the table, brings it to light, and delves deeper, drawing on many of the proposals developed mainly by civil society. It also opens up the possibility for a broad space that we, as social movements, have demanded for at least 30 years to carry out a phased, planned, but also grassroots-driven process regarding the use of fossil fuels and the reparations required in territories that have been affected for many years. In the case of Colombia, for more than 30 years by oil or thermal coal exploitation, and, of course, reparations for the environmental and social harm inflicted on communities that have been affected for all those years.
Los daños ambientales, sociales de comunidades que llevan, pues, todos esos años afectadas.
Next, Catalina Caro tells us about the People's Summit for a Fossil-Free Future, held as an alternative space to the official conference. This gathering of social society and social movements is part of a broader and long-standing process. Let's hear from Catalina.
El debate y la lucha por la salida de los combustibles.
The debate and the struggle to phase out fossil fuels, to halt the expansion of the extractive borders, is a struggle that we, the peoples, have waged for many years. In fact, it was said in the hallways and in the spaces where we had the opportunity to discuss this that we have been waiting more than 30 years to see this debate emerge. What is the connection? It is connected in every way. The agenda to phase out fossil fuels has been an agenda of the grassroots environmental and global movement. In that sense, the connection is everything because it is this agenda that must guide and direct the actions of states regarding how to carry out this process. We believe that despite the difficulties in connecting the two spaces, the People's Summit allowed us once again to come together with all the people who are part of this global climate movement to discuss, refine our proposals, and show that this agenda is an agenda of the peoples and goes beyond governments. This is an agenda of environmental justice and global justice that we hope to continue upholding, and we have insisted that the transition must be just feminist and people-centered. And if it does not bear those labels, it will not be so. People-centered means with the people. Feminist means with women and with gender justice. And just means justice in many senses. These have been the core demands of the grassroots movement.
Here we are. This is Real World Radio on air.
At the beginning, you may have heard Catalina mention the Global South as a key player in this process, so we spoke with Wayu Eka to get his insights on this topic and its connection to energy sovereignty. Wayu is a member of WALI, Friends of the Earth Indonesia. Here is what he told us.
I'm now in Santa Marta. We calling for just energy transition. Just energy transition is important for the global south context because the global south is the sacrifice zone that sacrifice for energy transition. We call for solution. We have critical minerals. And energy sovereignty, the community need to be more independent. They have a direct decision to manage their own energy and to be free from the exploitation. So energy sovereignty is the answer of the just energy transition.
What Wayu tells us about critical minerals is linked to the current green transition led by the same corporations and elites that have created and fueled the climate crisis. This unjust transition will lead to the continuation of the same systems of extractivism, dispossession, and colonialism that have been imposed on the Global South for decades. Now we will take a closer look at the proposal that Friends of the Earth International has developed together with allied movements as a possible path towards a truly just transition, that is, a feminist and just energy transition. Lise Masson, co-coordinator of the Climate Justice and Energy Program at Friends of the Earth International, tells us more about the proposal.
A feminist and just energy transition enables us to approach the question of transitioning away from fossil fuels from a holistic perspective, beyond a simple change from one energy source to another, to enable the transition to achieve transformative system change. This is critical because we see the risks of the corporate-led green transition that is being pushed by the same transnational corporations and elites that have created and continue to fuel the environmental, social, and economic crisis. The feminist and just energy transition pushes us to answer the questions not only of what kind of energy, but also how, by whom, and for whom. It means seeking a transition that enables us to dismantle imperialism and systems of oppression. This feminist and just energy transition puts people at the core of our vision, with women, queer people, workers, people of color, migrants, indigenous peoples, and all those marginalized by the current systems, taking the lead in painting and implementing that vision. Concretely, the feminist and just energy transition demands the dismantling of the imperialist project fueling wars, genocide, and militarism across the world. It requires that we see energy as a common good and a universal right rather than a commodity for elites to make infinite profit from. It demands the creation of feminist economies of care that put life at the center, the repayment of both the environmental debt and the care debt, the respect of the right to say no, and the end of sacrifice zones in the name of any kind of energy. It enables the creation of dignified, unionized jobs for all in decentralized community energy networks, and it rejects false solutions that only feed corporate power. The Friends of the Earth Federation has built a vision for this feminist and just energy transition across our regions, member groups, and struggles, as well as with our allies from across movements. We will continue enriching and building convergence around that vision and building popular power rooted in internationalist solidarity.
Here we are. This is Real World Radio on air.
And we continue to share perspectives about the path for a just transition. Now we will hear from Pablo Fajardo, lawyer for the Union of People Affected by Texaco, now Chevron, who tells us about the participation of affected communities in the just transition, as well as the importance of developing proposals from the ground up and centering affected people.
This space is important for the affected communities because, first of all, the communities are being heard. In other words, the fact that communities are participating and sharing their voices and their own realities in these spaces is already a significant step. The extent to which governments will actually listen to these kinds of perspectives is a second step whose full impact remains to be seen. Second, I think that at least those of us who are here were the ones who are convinced, right? And this is also important because we believe that through this kind of testimony about the reality of these communities, we can also reach other people who aren't convinced, who aren't familiar with these kinds of spaces. So It can be very useful for public education and for people to learn about this reality through practical examples. Corporations violate rights all over the world, especially in rural areas, peasant and indigenous communities. But what happens is that many people in the city just enjoy the energy, enjoy the benefits of energy, but very, very few people stop to think about the impacts that these companies have on communities in order to generate the energy that they enjoy. So it's good for communities to also speak out, say what they have to say, and for people in cities, and even in the countries of the North, to listen to those truths. And together, let's try to build coordinated processes among people from all sectors, the victims and the perpetrators, if possible, and if not, at least between the victims and the people from the cities who are sometimes silently complicit with those perpetrators.
Silenciosamente es cómplice de esos victimarios.
We will now resume our conversation with UDAP lawyer, but this time to have him explain how the fossil fuel industry and transnational corporations that prop it up are rooted in the patriarchy. He explains how the impacts of this industry fall particularly hard on women and children and breaks down community ties.
Una forma de amenazar de cómo las empresas amenazan esas, digamos, procesos.
In our case, here in Ecuador, we have conducted research on cancer cases. Out of every 100 cancer cases we have identified, 72 are women. In other words, women are the primary victims of the environmental disasters caused by hydrocarbon and mining companies. In communities, mainly rural, indigenous, and peasant communities, when men leave to do physically demanding work in the mines or oil fields, it is women who remain at home with the children, having to deal with contaminated water, and children who get sick because of it. So, this extractive activity has a more severe impact, especially on women. And that deeply undermines justice and equity. It makes these injustices even worse. And then, in many spaces, of course, this corporate behavior is part of what I would call an industrial, extractive corporate patriarchy. It encourages it, fuels it, and reproduces it every single day. So much so that, for example, in communities where there is greater hydrocarbon extraction or mining, there are also higher rates of violence, including femicides and direct assaults. These processes, these kinds of industries, often worsen health conditions, especially for women, increase domestic violence, and deepen social injustice between men and women. In other words, they cause severe harm to the entire community, but especially to women and children.
En todo el proceso de la comunidad, pero sobre todo mujeres y niños principalmente.
Transnational corporations have many mechanisms and tools at their disposal to protect their profits, obstruct processes aimed at social justice, and continue operating with total impunity without taking responsibility for the damage they have caused. One of these mechanisms is the ISDS, the Investor State Dispute Settlement System. Now, Frances Bergam from Friends of the Earth Europe will discuss this in more detail.
ISDS is a barrier to the just energy transition because ISDS is a mechanism by which investors can sue our countries for choices that are made in the favor of people's sovereignty over their natural resources or of climate regulation. A lot of states are afraid of the very high amounts that investors are trying to claim, and so they won't even go near more progressive environmental policy. Dismantling corporate power is important for the just energy transition because what we see over and over and over again is a short-term and very selective interest which is powering our political choices, and that's not enabling us to make the kind of decisions that we need in order for everybody to have what they need and in order for us to keep our stable climate.
As Frances points out, it's clear that for the transition to be truly just, it must also be anti-imperialist and dismantle corporate power, especially in a context of growing extraction of critical minerals such as lithium and cobalt, just to name a few. Across Africa, communities have extensive experience in these struggles. Sibesig Lemundla from Groundwork, Friends for the Earth South Africa, provides us with more insight about this.
Well, this is absolutely central and quite important because what we're witnessing globally is a race for control over land, over minerals, and over the future of energy itself. And without employing an anti-imperialist lens, the transition becomes another mechanism of domination, another mechanism of control, in that global South countries remain sites of extraction. They remain at the periphery, while the wealth and the benefits of whatever is extracted flow outward. But the cost, as they are, you know, social, ecological, the gender, are pushed onto our communities. So the externalities are borne by our communities. Well, and as Friends of the Earth, we've been quite clear in that a feminist just transition must confront, you know, historical and ongoing exploitation. A feminist just transition must advance self-determination. It ought to ensure reparations as well as the transformation of the system. So we have to ask, really, who is the transition for, but also who is paying the price? And, you know, a transition that is built on extractivism, corporate power, and imperialist control cannot be feminist and cannot be just.
The Groundwork Campaigner continues to delve deeper into the use and extraction of critical minerals and the logic and dynamics behind them, which, at the end of the day, undermine life in order to sustain privilege and profit.
We are being told that critical minerals are essential for the energy transition. But from a Friends of the Earth perspective, the issue is not the minerals in and of themselves, but it is rather the system that drives the extraction. Right now, critical minerals are being used to justify a new wave of extractivism. Across Africa, we're seeing blatant land dispossession, environmental degradation, as well as deepening inequality, whilst corporations and global north economies secure supply for their own energy transitions. Now, this directly contradicts the principles that we've committed to as Friends of the Earth International, which speaks to the defense of territories and the rights of communities. I mean, the principles around energy sovereignty and democratic control, as well as a transition, just transition that is rooted in care, in justice, and in the protection of life, and not profit. So if extraction continues this way, then critical minerals are not enabling a just transition, but they are reproducing injustice under a green label.
From Friends of the Earth, Latin America, and the Caribbean, Danilo Urrea echoes what Sipesich Lemundla says about anti-imperialism and provides concrete examples of how imperialism is advancing in his region and using energy as a weapon of war.
Anti-imperialism is essential for a just, feminist, and people-centered transition because the model of territorial exploitation for capitalist accumulation is based on occupation and dispossession carried out by corporations that answer to imperial forces. Today, wars are intrinsic to capital accumulation, which advances by destroying livelihoods to maintain the current energy model and preserve imperial control over it. Those imperial powers extend their reach through transnational corporations, and those corporate tentacles violate the rights of peoples and their human rights because energy has become a weapon of war. What is happening in Cuba and the attempt by the United States Empire to erase the lives of the Cuban people is directly tied to energy being used as a weapon of war, as a means of forcing change that responds only to the logic of exploitation and imperial control by one country over another. This happens while violating international standards through a criminal blockade that has lasted more than 60 years, and disregarding international law by continuing to attack a country simply because of its way of thinking. The case of Chevron, the transnational corporation, and its role in relation to the genocide in Palestine also shows us how energy is effectively being used as a weapon of war. The transition will not be just without energy as right, without a new economic model that recognizes care and the role of women in building that model and sustaining life. Nor will it be a just, feminist and popular transition without the self-determination of the peoples who advocate for a change in the energy model, for the right to live according to the ways of life they have built traditionally and ancestrally, free from the interference of empires that seek to homogenize life and destroy anything that does not conform to their impositions and the ways in which they seek to destroy this planet.
Y las maneras en que quieren destruir este planeta.
As we come to the end of this report from the People's Summit for a Fossil-Free Future and the first conference on transitioning away from fossil fuels, we asked Catalina Caro, whom you heard at the beginning, to share her assessment of both events held in Santa Marta, Colombia, the official conference and the People's Summit. This is what she told us.
We see that there can be two types of outcomes, the formal official ones and also those that we, as peoples, consider important. The three main outcomes were the implementation and continuation of this process through another new conference to be held in Tuvalu, the creation of a panel of experts to help address the requirements involved in stopping the expansion of fossil fuels by bringing in a scientific perspective through a panel of academics. And third, the need to strengthen national pathways ahead of the next conference and the broader process, what governments referred to as roadmaps. We in the grassroots movement consider these advances to be very important, although we had greater ambitions. We also faced many difficulties in ensuring full and effective participation across all spaces. We believe that we must continue to strengthen the mechanisms and methodologies to ensure that participation is, in fact, meaningful and binding. We continue to follow the work of grassroots movements in their territories and countries, trying to push for those roadmaps that are so often discussed in multilateral forums to also include clear national mechanisms that, first, ensure participation, second, ensure conditions of justice, and third, are sustained over time. These roadmaps must have a long-term vision, especially because past experiences have not necessarily guaranteed these three conditions. So I think one of the outcomes is that this discussion has also been opened up, and it has become much stronger. People, at least in Colombia, are left with a critical perspective and also one of observation and inquiry. Citizens are examining how to build and how to demonstrate that these proposals we have developed can be made possible. We are also left with the opportunity to have come together as peoples, peoples of the Global South, to continue insisting that the transition must have a territorial focus, that the transition for the Global South is different from that of the Global North, that the demands for justice and reparations we require in the Global South are different, and that we need not only multilateral spaces that claim to build real solutions, but that finally begin to understand these differences in needs and these differentiated responsibilities in relation to the global crisis.
Y de responsabilidades diferenciadas respecto a la crisis global.
And that is all for our report. If we want to learn more about this summit and the proposals of the social movements, visit rwr.fm and foai.org and follow us on Instagram at realradio.fm. We will keep communicating to bring about change. Until next time.
Here we are. This is Real World Radio on air.